It's fantasy football time on Patriots.com with the fantasy football champs.
Fitzgerald leaps, and he's got it! It's a touchdown for Larry Fitzgerald!
Dominate your league with the guys from FFChamps.com.
Three, throwing back in the end zone, leaping grab, touchdown!
Bill Enright and Anthony Grace are the fantasy football champs.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fantasy Football Champs presented by DraftKings. Super Bowl 49, it's all set. Seattle Seahawks made it back to the big game, as did your New England Patriots. I'm Bill Enright, joined by Anthony Gray's show producer is Kevin Collins, and you can join us on the phone lines, 855-728-7500. Send us an email, webradio@patriots.com. Gentlemen, there's no football this weekend. The Pro Bowl, no, it doesn't count.
Nope.
So we will focus on recapping the AFC and NFC Championship, along with handing out some awards and recapping the 2014 fantasy football season. I know a lot of people have been waiting for this special edition of the Fantasy Football Champs for a couple weeks now. We promised that we'd get it to you the week in between the AFC, NFC Championships, and the Super Bowl. So we're going to do that today, hand out some awards, but it's going to be a lot of fun. Let's get it started. Anthony, how you doing, my man?
Listen, Bill, I'm doing great. I know a little sad we don't have any football this weekend, but I think we have a hell of a Super Bowl in store for us in a couple of weeks with the Patriots and the Seahawks. Great offense in New England, one of the best defenses we've seen in a long time, if not ever, in the Seattle Seahawks. Watching Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll going head-to-head, those guys are just brilliant minds on either side of the football, so it's going to be very, very exciting. I can't wait for that game.
There's a lot of storylines already in place for the,
oh, yeah.
for the Super Bowl, and there always is.
Oh, yeah.
But there will be... I feel like there's always some it starts to get exhausted by the time we run into next week. So then the rumors get amplified. The not so obvious storylines start come to the surface. You start to get a little bit more of a player profile. What did this guy take to get to the NFL and, you know, his struggle growing up. So we'll get a lot of that over the next couple of weeks, but I always feel like since there is 2 weeks for the Super Bowl leading up to it, and then it's over in just one game, I always feel like the less we can do now and the more we can save for later is always better. So our last show of the year will be on Thursday.
Yeah.
The Patriots, we always said it, we go as long as the Patriots are winning, and they're winning right now, obviously playing into the Super Bowl. So our last show will be this Thursday. But we will have the fantasy football season recap today, AFC NFC Championship recap, and then we'll do a lot of preview stuff on Thursday.
Yeah, got a lot of good stuff today. Jam-packed show today. And like you said, Thursday, do a little Super Bowl preview, some fun stuff in there for
right.
the last show, and close out the season on a high note.
Now, I want to hand out some categories so people can call in, people can email in. Our categories for the fantasy football awards that we're going to give out. We'd love to hear from the fans. So take your time. Think of some good names here. We have the best waiver wire pickup of 2014, the fantasy rookie of the year, the breakout player of the year, the fantasy MVP, the comeback player, and the biggest bust. So there's a few different categories: comeback player, waiver wire pickup, rookie of the year, fantasy MVP, breakout player, and biggest bust. Send us an email, webradio@patriots.com. Give us a call, 855-728-7500. We'll get into that in a little bit down the line here. We got a lot of news, some head coaches, some offensive coordinators getting into place. So there's certainly always a lot going on in the NFL, even with the teams that aren't in the Super Bowl. For example, the Eagles. Big rumor today is that the Eagles are going to move up in the draft so that Chip Kelly can reunite with Marcus Mariota, the quarterback from Oregon. Now, any kind of draft talk in January, it really has to be taken with a grain of salt.
Yes.
Because there's just so much time. You never know what's going to happen. For anyone, maybe it does happen. Maybe the Eagles do trade up. Maybe they do get Marcus Mariota in the draft. But I'll tell you what, the report of that coming out today has no impact on it actually happening in late April.
Yeah, that's something, again, we got to wait to see what happens. You got the combine coming up. You got a lot of things with the Reese's Senior Bowl stuff's going on. You got so much stuff happening between now and the draft that we don't know what's going to happen. Now, it's not shocking that Chip Kelly and Marcus Mariota are being linked together because, you know, the whole he had the system in place to help Mariota excel and become potentially what he is in college football, and maybe they can do that again in the NFL. Now you get to the debate where the Eagles pick at number 20, Marcus Mariota is a top, you know, five pick potentially this year from what they're saying. Do they have enough to give up to get to that place? I mean, the Redskins gave up five picks, first round and second round, to jump up four spots for RG3. So the Eagles have to give – what do they have to give up to get 15 spots, 17 spots to get him? Who knows if it's going to happen, but it's definitely an interesting conversation and debate for the next couple of months in the football world.
Yeah, and that'll start to heat up as well, especially as we get into, like you said, the Senior Bowl and the NFL Combine. By the way, the NFL made the announcement that for the first time in history, they will have an NFL free agent and veteran combine. So it's not just going to be the rookies. What did you make of that news when you saw it?
The NFL is very creative, very ingenious, the way they market, the way they do things, the way they get more and more people interested in the game and the sport. And I think it's a great thing. It's something different. You're going to see some guys that, some names you know. Who knows what's going to happen down there? It's going to be very, very interesting to see how they pull it off this year and if it's something they're going to continue in years coming up after this.
Now, the pessimist fans would say, this is a chance for NFL free agents to come show us why you're not in the league anymore.
And I'm sure a lot of guys that are coming to this are going to prove once again why they're not playing.
But the optimist can say this is a chance for these guys to prove why they still should be in the league.
You're definitely going to see a couple of these guys who come down to this veteran combine get back into the league, I think. How many? Who knows? Who's going down there? We don't know all that information right now, but you know what? It's just something different. And again, if it doesn't work out this year, then the NFL probably scraps and doesn't do it again. But if it's something that shows promise, it gets a lot of viewership, a lot of attention, then the NFL is going to continue to do it, especially if they get one or two guys back into the league, names maybe that we've heard that didn't pan out the first time and get a second chance.
All right, let's get into some of the latest news involving the coaches getting hired. The biggest one is Gary Kubiak signing a contract with the Denver Broncos to become their head coach. Of course, Kubiak was their offensive coordinator in the mid '90s, all the way up until the 2000s with John Elway. He then went on to Houston to be the head coach of the Texans. Most recently, Patriot fans saw him on the Baltimore sidelines as their offensive coordinator. But here he is now taking a job with the Denver Broncos as their head coach. And so far, really nothing kind of rumor-based talk about Peyton Manning staying now that Gary Kubiak or Peyton Manning leaving now that Gary Kubiak is their head coach.
Yeah, Peyton Manning obviously is going to be the X factor in Denver this entire offseason until he decides if he's coming back or if he's not coming back. With the free agents, they potentially have to sign a new offense that's coming in place with Gary Kubiak. Peyton Manning has a big decision to make, and that's going to really factor in and impact the rest of that team, that division, the NFL in general, and especially fantasy football players next year.
It'll be interesting if Peyton decides, you know what, I'm not going to come back. And then if any kind of gossip comes out after he makes that announcement, it's because of Gary Kubiak. Because let's be honest, I mean, the guy really hasn't had a ton of success as a head coach. He was with Houston for, what, six seasons?
Yeah, six, 7 years, something like
that.
Yeah,
only two playoff appearances.
Yeah, but hey, beat Andy Dalton and the Cincinnati Bengals twice. Now, beating Andy Dalton, is that really an accomplishment? I don't know at this point, but Peyton Manning, I think that is going to be the biggest story of the offseason until we hear a decision out of Peyton Manning, and no question about it.
Kind of like a Brett Favre watch.
Yeah, but I think Peyton Manning's not going to retire and unretire 17 times. I think once Peyton Manning hangs it up, I think he's done.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
At least as a player. Who knows? Maybe he gets some sort of front office gig. He's the type of guy that would be great to see in a front office situation like a John Elway. He's a very smart football guy, very intelligent man, and seeing him help run a team would be very interesting to me.
Now, the next, so who's going to fill in for Gary Kubiak? It's Mark Trestman.
Mark Trezza,
who was the former head coach of the Chicago Bears for the last 2 years. He was hired as the offensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, just a little while ago. So yep. Mark Trestman filling in, sliding right on in for Gary Kubiak down in Baltimore. Again, Mark Trestman, I like what he does on offense. Obviously, that's his strong suit. The Chicago Bears defense definitely let them down. He had Jay Cutler to work with, which wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but he's got a lot of pieces down there in Baltimore in place, a lot of things to work with. Torrey Smith, I know Steve Smith's getting older, but he got rejuvenated this year. Joe Flacco is a solid quarterback, and they bring back Justin Forsett. They got a good running game, yep. Some nice tight ends. So I like Mark Trestman. I like that hire. I think he's going to make that Baltimore offense at least as potent as it was this year, if not a little bit better.
Now, another offensive coordinator was hired, but it is not Doug Marrone. Doug Marrone took a job with the Jacksonville Jaguars, but as the offensive line coach.
Yeah.
They did hire an offensive coordinator, but that was Greg Olsen, who was the former Raiders offensive coordinator. So here's Doug Marrone last year, was a head coach for the Buffalo Bills. He opted out of his contract. He'll make $5 million this year.
Jeez.
In addition to whatever the Jaguars are going to pay him as their offensive line coach.
Unreal. I guess it's not a bad gig when you can get out of a contract, make $5 million, and then get another job and have a little less pressure on you. You're not the head guy. You're not on the hot seat. People aren't looking at you all the time. And he's not even the coordinator. He's an offensive line coach. I mean, that kind of, even though he's the assistant head coach, quote unquote, that kind of puts him, what, third, fourth down on the list for the Jaguars. So, Doug Marrone is, I think that's a good move by him. And, you know, Jacksonville, I think that they're making small moves every year, but you can tell as the years have been going by the past couple seasons under Gus Bradley that they're not a 500 team. They're not a team that's making a playoff run next year, but they're putting pieces in place, and it's going to be interesting to see how they come out next year with a lot of young talent on offense.
All right, so since the Raiders offensive coordinator, Greg Olsen, is now with the Jaguars, the Raiders needed a new OC, and they hired Bill Musgrave, who spent the last year with the Eagles, and before that he was the offensive coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings. I think a lot of the Eagles' offensive success comes from Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
When you think about the Vikings the last couple of years when Leslie Frazier was their head coach, I don't really think dominating offense. I just think Adrian Peterson being the focal point. So, in my mind, a little bit of a questionable hire here by the Oakland Raiders.
It definitely questionable. When you have Adrian Peterson to hand the ball off to, it makes your life as an offensive coordinator that much easier.
Yep.
The Oakland Raiders don't have that kind of running. I mean, Latavius Murray showed signs. I like some of the things we saw out of him, but he's not an Adrian Peterson type running back. I don't think he's not going to be a stud like Adrian Peterson was. And again, this happened last year because of Chip Kelly, where Bill Lazor went down to Miami, got hired into a coordinator position. And like you said, Chip Kelly's the guy running it, making this team look good, and a lot of the coaches underneath him are benefiting by getting these good jobs.
All right, so that was kind of a runaround from the latest head coaching hires. The Atlanta Falcons still do not have their head coach. I believe that is the only vacancy as head coach. There are some teams with vacancies, you know, as coordinator or defensive coordinator, positional coaches. But as far as head coaches, The Atlanta Falcons are the only team without a main guy.
Yeah, and I believe a lot of the reports are saying that they're like Dan Quinn out of Seattle. So,
Yes. Again,
that's another thing. If they don't hire anyone this week, obviously it's going to be after the Super Bowl. They're going to hire one of these coordinators off either New England or Seattle.
All right, so that's the latest news from around the NFL. 855-728-7500 is the phone number. Remember, we're taking your nominees for a lot of fantasy awards that we're handing out today. Waiver wire pickup of the year, fantasy rookie of the year, breakout player, comeback player, biggest bust, and 2014 fantasy MVP. Let us know who you would nominate. Let's jump to the phone lines. We got Josh in Virginia. Hey, Josh.
What's happening, gentlemen?
How's it going, man?
Doing pretty well, guys. How did you enjoy that game?
Which one?
Oh, the Patriots game on Saturday night, Anthony. Come on, man.
I know where you're going with this, man. Come on. Listen, halfway through the third quarter, I kind of just turned it off and put on something else. It was one of those games where it was over. You knew it was over. The Colts, at least at halftime, kept it within 10. I thought maybe we're going to have a bit of a game on our hands, and then, you saw what happened in the second half. So, Look, the Patriots looked awesome. They dominated that team. So I that's going to put a little fear into the heart of Seattle. And with Richard Sherman and
Earl Thomas,
yeah, both banged up. It's going to be an interesting watch these next 2 weeks to see what happens.
It is. I think Richard Sherman's going to be okay. I mean, he just tweaked his elbow. He's got 2 weeks to heal up. So expect him, you know, probably on the likes of LaFell or somebody like that. But it's going to be a good game, man. As long as the Patriots can, their corners can do their thing, shut down those poor receivers the Seahawks have, I think they can crowd the box and totally shut down Lynch and Russell Wilson. But we'll see. You know, beast mode runs harder as the game goes on. So
you bring up a good point there, and we're definitely going to focus on this on Thursday's show. All right, so the Seahawks receivers aren't that great. The Patriots have good receivers, but the Seahawks DBs are great. So, in my mind, it's a little bit of a wash. You have mediocre receivers from Seattle. You have really good receivers from New England. But you have great defenders from the Seahawks. So, I think that's a wash to me. You can't give either team the edge for receivers because Seattle's secondary is just it makes great receivers mediocre, as we saw with Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb just last week.
This is true, but I'm so much happier that they're not playing the Packers, that they're playing the Seahawks. I mean, the Packers with their up-tempo, you know.
You might be the only person to be saying that, man.
Proven difficult, man.
I don't know, Josh. I think you might be. You're in the minority with rather playing the Seahawks than the Packers. I really think that the Packers were a much easier team to beat.
I have told everybody that the Broncos were going to get annihilated, too. So we're going to yeah. But, I mean, I think the Pats got this one, dude. I'm going to call it 31-16.
31-16 is your prediction? All right. We might have to have a prediction sheet for our Thursday show. Call back on Thursday with your prediction, Josh.
Got it.
This way we can make it official.
Nominations, man. Odell Beckham, Rookie of the Year, Waiver Wire Pickup of the Year. MVP, well, I'm going to have to go Le'Veon Bell, man. Bust Moneyball.
Pick. Let's go and rewind here. Don't choose ODB for pickup and rookie. Give him one award.
All right. Well, I would have to go with Rookie of the Year, man. No other wideout really quite topped his production. I mean, nobody really topped his production as far as the rookies were concerned.
All right. Who's your waiver wire?
Seattle game, he tore Richard Sherman apart for about, 60 yards or 40 yards in that one reception. Just watching him in the warm-ups. I said, how is he still on the waiver wire?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he won two championships this year. It was nuts.
Who's your waiver wire pick?
Super Bowl. Waiver wire? I would have to say my best waiver wire pickup of the year was Greg Olsen.
Wow, he wasn't drafted in your league?
Yeah, I was surprised people passed on him in the draft, man. I actually was lucky enough to sneak him off the waiver wire. But in my other league, I did get Russell Wilson off the waiver wire after some fool was dumb enough to drop him after that game.
Breakout player? Who's your breakout player?
Breakout player. Let's see. I would have to say I'm giving Le'Veon Bell my MVP. I would have to say breakout player would probably be Jeremy Maclin earlier in the season, but then he fell off, so that's kind of a tough one. Let's
see. Yeah, that breakout position for the award this year is kind of tough because a lot of these guys are going to be up for other things, like the ODB. Right. Someone that could be up for that breakout player, also rookie there, also waiver wire pickup, Le'Veon Bell. So we're going to have a lot of options for that breakout player of the year. So many names that we can throw out there, but again, a lot of these guys are going to be nominated, quote-unquote, for a lot of categories we got.
All right, Josh, appreciate the phone call, man. Give us a call back on Thursday with your Super Bowl prediction.
Right on, gentlemen.
All right, brother, take it easy.
All right.
Yeah, Anthony, see, that's the problem. I think we should just stick with, if you're going to nominate ODB for Rookie of the Year, then don't call him your waiver wire pickup of the year and don't call him your breakout player of the year either. Leave him as a Rookie of the Year. Waiver wire pickup of the year, he probably should win that.
Yeah,
but you're not going to hand a guy five trophies at the end of this ceremony. Let's spread the wealth around.
I think we have to. Yeah, like I said, it's going to be tough. There's a couple guys. Again, waiver wire pickup is so, I guess, tough because a lot of different leagues, like Josh said, Greg Olsen and Russell Wilson on the waiver. I didn't see those guys on my waiver wire at all this year. So I guess it all depends what kind of league you're playing and whatnot. So there's going to be a couple guys out there like an ODB who wasn't drafted at all, but there's going to be a lot of, I think, wacky answers for waiver wire pickup depending on who was out there for these people.
Yeah, and it can't just be like, all right, so he was a good waiver wire pickup for one game. Like, it can't just be
solid. You can plug him in as needed, at least a flex player weekly, if not better.
Right.
Yeah.
At least a flex player, if not better. Right. All right, I'm with you there.
Okay.
What do you say we jump back to the phone line? We got Dr. Nick on the line.
There he is.
Dr. Nick of Boston. How's it going, man?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
How you been, man?
I'm pretty good. I was on vacation last week in San Diego, so can't complain.
Beautiful. How are you taking a vacation? Aren't you in med school?
So I'm actually kind of transitioning between a research year that I took and heading back to do the second half of med school. So, yes, I am in med school, but I am not in the middle of taking care of patients at this time. So okay. Could afford to get a little bit of a family vacation in there.
Nice. Good for you.
Yeah, yeah. So I just wanted to point out to you guys that I'm currently in fourth place in your little, fantasy football playoffs tournament here.
Awesome.
I'm glad you brought this up. Let's take a look at your team over here as I sign it to my account. Tell us who you have on your squad.
Okay, so I've got my quarterbacks for Tom Brady, Tony Romo, and Aaron Rodgers.
Tell us who you got remaining left.
Who have I got left? Well, yeah. See, that's the thing. That's why I don't think I'm going to come in first, because I have seven people left, and there are some guys that have like 10 or 11. So they're right around me. So I'm not going to win, but I've got Tom Brady, Marshawn Lynch, the Seahawks and Pats defenses, Gronk, Edelman, and Gostkowski.
All right, so you have a total – right now, first place is 485 points. For those that don't know at home, we ran a fantasy postseason contest for all of our members at FF Champs. In addition to, the weekly tournaments that we have at DraftKings that we've been telling everyone about, this was kind of a one-shot deal where you set your lineup before Wild Card Weekend, and it plays out through the length of the Super Bowl. Right now, the leader is in 400 – it has 485 points, but he only has four players on his team that are still remaining. Because remember, you said it before Wild Card Weekend. So this guy has Andrew Luck, Joe Flacco, Aaron Rodgers, Dan Heron, DeMarco Murray, Jonathan Stewart, Randall Cobb, T.Y., Eddie Lacy, Demaryius Thomas, Antonio Brown. So this guy was looking for points early on, but he only has four players left. Second place, 480 points, has 10 players left. Third place, 1 point behind second place. He has 10 players left. And then there you are, Nick, 478 points, and you have seven players left. So it certainly seems like you can be in the running for maybe the top three based on your total points. But the guys in second, third, and fifth have 10 guys left, and they're really right in that same total points as you are.
Yep, and there's a guy in ninth that has 11 players left, and he's only – five behind, so
right.
It's gonna be. I'm not expecting the miracle finish like in Seattle this past weekend, but I'll be happy with the top five. That's pretty good. I'm doing better than you two guys, so I don't. I don't know what you were thinking, but
I was thinking. I'll tell you what I was thinking. I was thinking that the Seattle Seahawks would lose to the Green Bay Packers. If you look at my team, I have all Patriots and all Packers. I mean, I was not shy about telling everyone that strategy from the beginning of this playoffs. So I was going to go with the two teams. I was going to go with players from the two teams that I thought would make the Super Bowl, and that was the Packers. Unfortunately, they got knocked out last week. You talked to me in the third quarter of last week, and you might have said, "Wow, Bill's a genius."
Yeah, well, no, I thought my Super Bowl pick was going to be Seahawks Patriots. So that's kind of why I chose the guys that I did. I didn't pick Russell Wilson or Jermaine Curson, unfortunately, because I didn't think Russell Wilson would get me enough. Tony Romo did a pretty good job despite the fact that he lost in the divisional round. So I'm pretty okay with that. But anyway, you guys were looking for some players for awards, right?
That's correct. What do you got?
So the MVP for me has to be DeMarco Murray.
Okay.
The best comeback player, right? That's got to be Gronk. My waiver wire pickup, I'm trying to decide between Forsett and Hill. But I guess, that's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a wash for me. I guess, you guys might have to check the stats, but I think Forsett had a little bit better of a season than Hill. I can't remember exactly.
Jeremy Hill finished with 1,124 yards, 9 touchdowns. Justin Forsett, on the other hand, I just had it here a second ago. Justin Forsett finished with 1,266 yards, 8 touchdowns, to go along with 44 catches, 263 yards. So they were very close. Hill had one extra touchdown. Forsett had about 100 more yards and about 25 more catches.
I mean, I would, I guess I would give it to Hill. I don't, I mean, neither of them were drafted real heavily. I don't know. It's kind of a wash for me, but those would be my two guys to consider for that award. Rookie of the Year, I've talked to you guys before about how much I love ODB, so got to give him Rookie of the Year. What am I missing here? Did I name them?
Biggest bust, breakout player?
Oh, biggest bust has to be Monte Ball. I mean, you guys knew. Every website had him top five in terms of running backs, if not overall, and then he just completely busted.
You're the third person to say that to me today, and I can't believe – I'm not even going to say who I can't believe people haven't mentioned. I'm going to wait until we get into
Adrian,
our picks.
You're talking about Adrian Peterson?
How has no one said him?
Yep.
He is
yep.
the biggest bust of the year. He was a consensus top three pick.
He played
one game.
Okay, I was going to say, did he even play a game? But, yeah, that's true. All right. I don't know. I mean, yeah, you're right. No, I'm changing my mind. It's AP.
It's not even a debate for me.
Yeah, I don't think.
Listen, I you said Gronk for comeback player of the year. I have a different guy. But I can certainly go with Gronk. I can make the argument for Gronk. I can agree with that. You can't even make a debate about Adrian Peterson being the biggest bust of the year.
Right.
It's just not everything comes into play on that. The whole trial, what he did, how he was supposed to come back into the league, and then everyone was picking him up, and then he wasn't coming back, and then he appealed, and then he lost the appeal. It was like a roller coaster all year long, and he only played in one stinking game.
No, you're right. No, I completely agree. I totally forgot. I really totally forgot about that.
That's the thing. He was so bad this year that people are forgetting about one of the greatest running backs of the last 30 years. That's how absurd his situation was this year.
I try to forget about it because I picked him first in one of my drafts.
See, there you go.
I'm trying to forget it, but you're right. It's completely true.
And that's another reason why I was slamming all the LeSean McCoy owners this year that were complaining about how badly McCoy was playing. You could have picked Peterson.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. No, I agree. As far as breakout player goes, I don't know if this was C.J. Anderson's rookie year or not, but he would be a pretty good – I would have to pick him.
Wasn't his rookie year, but he certainly had his breakout year.
Yeah. If it had been his rookie year, I don't know if you could call that a breakout if he was a rookie. But, yeah, he gets my vote, I guess. Close runners-up would be Macklin and Golden Tate, because Golden Tate came from this Seahawks offense that wasn't really known for – I mean, he was good within that offense, but it was nice to see him also do really well on a team that's more traditional, like two-stud wide receiver type of a set. So, but anyway, those are my takes, guys, and, you know, I'm going to be rooting hard for the Pats. They're my team, and hopefully everyone enjoys the Super Bowl. I'm really looking forward to it.
I bet you are, Nick. Best of luck to the Pats. I'm sure you'll have a lot of fun and certainly a lot of time to get into a breakdown of the Seahawks and the Patriots in this year's Super Bowl. But first, I want to take a quick break. When we get back, let's recap all the action from this past weekend. Kevin, I want to get your thoughts about being on the sidelines. It was a complete blowout, but it was also pouring rain. I want to know how soaked you got, how that team-issued gear kept you warm. We're going to get all of your inside knowledge, all of your inside information when we get back. You're listening to the Fantasy Football Champs presented by DraftKings on Patriots.com Radio.
Yeah.
We went to a break.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No. Pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Wanna split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument to flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of Domino's. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go.
Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Bill Enright and Anthony Grace want to help you dominate your fantasy football league. Call in with your questions at 855-PATS-500 or email the champs at webradio@patriots.com. Now, back to Bill and Anthony.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Football Champs, listening on patriots.com radio. We are brought to you by DraftKings. There was a really fun tournament this past weekend on DraftKings for the AFC and the NFC Championship games. Now, there were four teams left in action. There were a limited amount of players. If you looked on some of the results, a lot of the DraftKings finalists had, you know, top three teams all had the same players. Still, I didn't see any ties, though, which is still very interesting.
Very.
But I have to believe that next week for the Super Bowl, it'll be even tougher because there's only two teams now, extremely limited player pool.
Yeah, if there's not a tie with two teams, I don't think it's physically possible at that point. It's going to be interesting to see what people make because obviously, as people who've been playing on DraftKings throughout the season, and if they continue playing it during the playoffs, they notice that the prices have been going up for players. Obviously, since you have such a limited draft pool, and the floor has been dropping a little bit as well. So very interesting. You're going to see some high prices. Obviously, shouldn't be shocking to anybody out there. But again, as the playoffs have been going on, more and more you need to find that one sneaky breakout player that could have a big game. And who knows who is going to be in the Super Bowl? We got a couple of weeks to think about that. But again, one of these guys is going to have to step up and have just a crazy big game out of nowhere for someone to win it.
Super Bowl 49, New England Patriots versus the Seattle Seahawks. It'll happen on February 1st. I believe kickoff is at, 6:35?
So yeah, usually in that mid 6 o'clock range.
Yeah, obviously we're all pumped up for the Super Bowl, but let's find out how these teams got here. Now, Kevin, I just want to go to you quickly. I know you were probably on the field warming up, going through your pregame routine. Did you get to see any of the Packers Seahawks game?
I did. We watched it during the pregame show quite a bit, and our game actually got delayed 10 minutes because of that game going in overtime.
Now, I was debating that with my friends because I know that once the Seahawks game went into overtime, they're like, all right, we have to watch the Patriots game. And I said, no, they're going to, you know, they'll delay it a little bit.
Yeah,
now, is that something that
minutes.
Comes down from the league or from the...
It does, yep. We actually had a meeting on Saturday morning here, and the league told us, like, straight up, if that game goes into overtime, it's possible that you guys will be delayed. And the NFL reps that were here were like, well, you know, we'll get the message out to the team and the fans and everything out, you know, basically not all the fans in public, but the fans that were here at the stadium.
Right.
So we put up a graphic on the board, like with a lower third that said, you know, the start of our game is being pushed back by 10 minutes. And we actually put the Seahawks Packers game on the jumbo for the fans to watch.
Nice.
That was nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it actually worked out good from our perspective. It was a little awkward at first because, you know, we were all out there ready to go. The teams were instructed to stay in the locker room for an extra 10 minutes. But it was a little awkward, you know, kind of standing out there and you want to go and you're ready to go and you've been waiting long enough. And the last thing you want is, you know, for a game that big to be delayed.
Right.
But what actually worked to our favor, Bill, was people, you know, really didn't know the game was delayed until they got into the stadium. So the place was absolutely packed for intros. It gave people like an extra 10 minutes to kind of file through security and everything like that.
Right.
So whereas, you know, maybe you get halfway through the first quarter sometimes before everybody's made it through like the concourses and, you know, down the aisles to their seats.
Right, to get settled in.
Yeah, so it was like really rocking from, you know.
From the start.
Yeah, so like from the intros into the anthem. And the crowd actually, we had Pat Monahan, who's like the lead singer of the band Train.
Yep.
That's who the league and CBS got for us to sing. So Jim Nance like introduces this guy. And I actually felt bad for him because he was singing, and he was actually drowned out by the crowd.
Huh.
Like, you could barely hear the guy.
Wow.
I was like, wow, like, I don't really recall, you know, having this happen in my time here. And then I thought about it, and I was like, that's probably because the place is, like, half empty during anthems usually.
All right, so the Packers and Seahawks game, you did get to watch it.
Yes. I mean, did I watch it as closely as you and Ant probably got to? Probably not because I was running around, but I got to see, like, the major plays.
All right. So here the final score was 28-22, overtime victory by the Seahawks.
Did that hit the over because of the overtime touchdown?
Yes.
It did. It made some people happy, I'm sure.
By like a half a point or something like that.
Very happy.
Now, this was a good game. I don't think it was a great game. The beginning, the first quarter, and the last 5 minutes, including the overtime.
A lot of turnovers.
That's what was great in my mind. The in-between stuff, I think it was actually kind of a boring game. Back and forth, Aaron Rodgers not fully healthy. To start the game, the way it started, I thought was incredible. The Packers get the ball, drive down the field, 3rd and 10, Rodgers throws an interception, Richard Sherman picks it off. Seahawks take over, 1st down, 2nd down, 3rd and 7 comes along, Russell Wilson throws a pass, intercepted. So before there's 10 minutes into the game, we already have 2 interceptions, right?
Yeah.
Packers go down the field, score a touchdown, overruled, settle for a field goal. A lot of people are playing a little bit Monday morning coach or couch coach, whatever you call it, whatever, saying that they should have went for it on 4th and 1 after Eddie Lacy was stuffed. But it's the start of the game. There's only 10 minutes left. There's only 10 minutes into the game in the first quarter. They're on the road. They settle for a field goal here to make it 3-0.
I think you got to go for it there. I really disagree with the fact they didn't go for it on the half yard line, if that. They were right there. What's the worst case scenario? You get your defense out there. Seattle's on the half yard line. Could Seattle drive all the way down the field? Potentially, sure, it could happen. But I think you got to feel comfortable and show confidence that A, you trust your offense to get the ball in the end zone, to silence the crowd, to give yourself an even bigger advantage on the road, and B, show confidence that your defense can come out there and stop these guys and keep good field position for you for the next drive that you potentially have.
All right, well, regardless, they went for the field goal, 3-0. On that kickoff, Green Bay just scored a field goal. They're kicking off to the Seattle Seahawks. Doug Baldwin fumbles on the kickoff.
Yep.
The Green Bay recovers on Seattle's 23-yard line. A few plays later, they settle for a field goal. It's 6-0. 5 minutes left in the first quarter, and the Seahawks have only run 3 plays.
Unreal. That was unreal.
There were 3 turnovers in just the first 10 minutes of this game.
It was very sloppy, like you said, in the very beginning of the game. It really didn't get super interesting until closer to the end, but you can look back at a lot of things in this game and say this might have been a turning point, but again, those Seattle's defense just proved why they are so great, holding Green Bay to those 2 field goals after giving up an interception and a fumble on back-to-back possessions.
All right, so still in the first quarter, Green Bay scores a touchdown. They end the first quarter 13-0. Mm-hmm. Second quarter starts, Seattle punts, Green Bay kicks a field goal. They're up 16-0 with 9 minutes left in the second quarter. Seattle gets the ball back, throws an interception. Still 16-0. Green Bay punts. Seattle, interception. 2 minutes left in the first half. Now, that is 3 interceptions by Russell Wilson. They have 0 points, and the Packers have 16 points heading into the 2-minute warning in the first half.
You never expect a performance like that out of Seattle. I know their offense is not the greatest, but there's no way. If someone came to me before this game started and said, Russell Wilson is going to throw 3 picks, you know, but before the first half is over, I would have called them crazy. If they would have said, and they had a fumble on a kick. I mean, everything that could have gone wrong for Seattle basically went wrong in that first half. And they still were only down 16 points, which is, you know, 2 touchdowns if you're going for 2-point conversions, let's say. So you really did not put yourself in that big of a hole when you're down 16-0 for all the horribly bad mistakes you've been making.
I missed an Aaron Rodgers interception in there. He got picked off as well. So that was 2 picks for Aaron Rodgers, 3 picks for Russell Wilson. Now, to end the first half, the Seahawks were driving down the field with about, I don't know, 30 seconds left, and Russell Wilson took a sack. Then there was a false start, and then they just, you know, ran off the field toward the end of, I think they ran one more play in for, I don't know, -2 yards or something.
Yeah.
Start the third quarter. Seattle gets the ball. They can't do anything with it. Green Bay gets the ball back. They can't do anything with it. 2 back-to-back 3 and outs. Then Seattle goes on their longest drive of the game. 10 minutes into the third quarter, it was a fake field goal. Now, a lot of people are saying this is the play of the game. I don't think it was. I'll get into my play of the game later. But this was ran to perfection here.
Yeah.
It was 4th and 10, and it, you know, they didn't have – some teams, you know, some teams use their punter as their holder. Some teams use their backup quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Seattle uses their punter.
Yeah, John Ryan.
John Ryan throws a great – first of all, it was a great fake, like he was going to run.
Oh,
and then
my
he just
God.
Does like a little bit of a drop-off, like a little bit of a teardrop pass.
Yeah, just a little touch pass.
To the tackle for a touchdown, 19-yard touchdown.
Yeah, you see him pull out when he gets that ball, and you're like, he's going to run it for the first down, and you see the guys crashing on him.
Yeah.
Maybe not, and he just, whoop, little lob over the top, and it, perfect pass, perfect grab. A guy doesn't throw the ball a lot. A guy doesn't catch the ball a lot. I mean, you can't execute that play more perfectly with two guys that aren't in a position that they're used to playing.
Was that your play of the game?
I don't want to say it was the play of the game, but that really is what got that crowd back into it. That's really what got Seattle, I think, feeling we can come back and win this thing, because their defense was playing great. They finally got points on the board, and I think that Seattle style on thinking, look, we got points on the board without using our offense, really. Look, we're gonna get better as this game goes on, and they showed it later on, but I would not call that the play of the game, no.
All right, well, remember how I said this game started out great, and then in the middle of the game it was kind of boring,
yep.
And then toward the second half, toward the, you know, the last 5 minutes into overtime, it was great again?
Yeah.
All right, so that play, that fake field goal, happened at 4 minutes and 50 seconds in the third quarter. Nothing happens for the rest of the third quarter, and nothing really happens until the Packers kick a field goal in the fourth quarter to make it 19-7. Nothing happens from the Seattle. Nothing happens for Green Bay. Russell Wilson throws an interception with 5 minutes left in the game, okay? Green Bay is up 19-7. Russell Wilson has just thrown his fourth interception. Now, if you're a Green Bay fan and you saw the players on the sidelines, they were celebrating. They were celebrating
Like
they were going to go to the Super Bowl. 5 minutes left in the game. You're on the road, you're up 19-7, and you just picked off Russell Wilson for the fourth time in the game. Instead of running out some clock, they take up a minute of the clock, and they punt for 30 yards. Give the ball back to Seattle with 3 minutes and 52 seconds left.
You know what blew my mind there, Bill, is when they get that interception, that fourth one by Russell Wilson with 5 minutes left, like you said. The fact that he just drops to the ground kind of took me by surprise. It's not like there's a minute and a half left. There's 5 minutes. There's timeouts on the board.
That threw me
for a loop. I was not expecting that. And when he went down, I thought to myself, there's time on the clock. They're showing Clay Matthews on the sideline kind of celebrating. And it's like, look, it's not over. It's going to take a lot for them to lose that game, which obviously happened. But just the fact that he went down really, really threw me off.
All right, well, how about this? After that play, the Packers take over 1st and 10 from their own 43. 1st and 10, 5 minutes and 4 seconds left. Eddie Lacy, negative 4 yards. Now, 5 minutes left in the game. They ran the ball 7 seconds later. 4 minutes and 57 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Negative 2 yards. So now it's 3rd and 16. 7 seconds after that, Eddie Lacy up the middle, 2 yards. They're punting on 4th and 14. And there's only four, and there's still 4 minutes left in the game. Now Seattle gets the ball back. They march down the field. Big play to Marshawn Lynch on a pass from Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson scrambles for a couple yards. Lynch gains a couple yards, and then Russell Wilson runs one in for the touchdown.
Yeah, and at that point you kind of feel, this is Green Bay. They might be giving this one away with a couple mistakes they had earlier in the game.
19-14, Seattle scored with 2 minutes and 13 seconds left. So we still have the 2-minute warning to go. Here comes the onside kick. Now, I do not excuse Brandon Bostic for his football instincts taking over. His job was to block for Jordy Nelson and let Jordy Nelson recover this onside kick. And if you look at every single picture or every single highlight of this play, you can see Jordy Nelson ready to catch the ball.
Yep.
Brandon Bostic let his instincts take over, but that's not being a good football player. That's being mentally ill-prepared. He had to remember what his job was. He had to ignore his instincts and say, my responsibility on this play is to block. I'm not going to go up and make a catch. I don't care if it's right in front of me. I'm going to have faith in my team and my coaching staff and my special teams coordinator to make the right decisions. If I'm not supposed to go up and catch the ball, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to just block and let Jordy Nelson behind me catch it. He totally let down the Packer Nation on that play. Is it his fault that they came back from a 17-7 game with 3 minutes left? No, of course not. But whenever you see an onside kick and the guy that fumbles it, yeah, he is going to be the whipping post, if you will.
Yeah, he's going to take the heat again. Is it his fault 100%? Of course not. There were so many plays you can go back to in this game and say this could have happened, that could have happened, what have you. Bostic's going to take a lot of heat. He's just the main focal point because of that huge play. But like you said, he was not supposed to touch that ball. He was supposed to block, let Jordy Nelson handle it, and they would have been going to the Super Bowl. But why do teams like Seattle and the New England Patriots play so well? Why do they get to Super Bowls? Why do they get to championship games? Because they know what they have to do, the players. If Pete Carroll says, Marshawn Lynch, listen, buddy, I need you to just, you know, fake a handoff, Marshawn Lynch isn't going to complain about it. He's not going to try something different. These guys get to the Super Bowl because they stay where they need to be, they do what they got to do, and they believe in their coaching staff that they're going to put them in the right position to win. And Brandon Bostic just didn't do that.
All right, so now the Seattle Seahawks get the ball back. 2 minutes left. They're on the 50-yard line. And in four plays, they take the lead. Within four plays, 15-yarder by Russell Wilson, and then a big 24-yard touchdown by Marshawn Lynch. He scored with a minute and 33. And this sets up what I consider the biggest play of the game. Because right now, Seattle is winning by 1 point. 20-19. They just took the lead with that Marshawn Lynch touchdown. Green Bay, they go for the two-point conversion. Green Bay had them stopped. Julius Peppers was breathing down Russell Wilson's face, breathing down his neck. He almost had him sacked. Russell Wilson throws up a prayer, and that prayer was answered. Luke Wilson catches it on, like, the two-yard line. Green Bay was in shock that he even made the catch, and then they forgot to tackle him.
Unreal.
So they converted on the two-point conversion. Now, this is my play of the game because the play should have been dead. Julius Peppers had Russell Wilson sacked.
Mm-hmm.
Wilson makes an incredible play. I can't even say it was a skill. This was luck. He just threw up the ball, and it just happened to land where Luke Wilson was standing.
That's
to me the play of the game.
It was one of the most surreal plays I think I've ever seen in a football game. Just you see him just jump off his back foot and just kind of float it, and you're like, what's going to end? Wide open, Luke Wilson, no one around. Once you saw that happen, you're like, they're going to the Super Bowl. Even if Green Bay comes back and ties it and they go to overtime, they can't win this game because everything is on the side of Seattle right now. So that play was just obviously a lot of luck, but look, sometimes luck is all you need to get to the Super Bowl, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, that gave Seattle the lead 22-19. Green Bay does, in fact, take the ball with a minute and 19 seconds left, drive down the field. Mason Crosby kicks a 48-yard field goal. The game's going into overtime, 22-22. Seattle wins the coin toss, and within six plays, they drive down the field, and Russell Wilson drops one into Jermaine Kearse's hands for a 35-yard touchdown to send the Seattle Seahawks back to the Super Bowl for the second straight year.
And Russell Wilson saved his best-looking pass of the game for that last one to Jermaine Kearse to score that game-winning touchdown. That was a gorgeous pass to win the game. Look, again, that the middle of the game got real choppy, real iffy, but when it comes down to it, had a good start, and the way that game ended was pretty epic.
The beginning was awesome. The ending was epic. The middle was a little bit boring, but boy, it was really shocking to see the Green Bay Packers lose the game and the Seattle Seahawks win the game in the fashion that they did.
Yeah, 100% agree. And look, congratulations to the Seattle Seahawks. Green Bay went up there, and I think they played a closer game than maybe a lot of people really felt they could have played. And when you see them get that interception in the beginning, look, Seattle picks off Aaron Rodgers first. He goes, and you think, oh, man, Seattle's defense is going to dominate. They come back, get the ball back right away, and they kick those two field goals. And I just thought to myself, with those two field goals, they're not going to win this game. Seattle's going to come back. It's going to be close, and those two field goals are going to come back, and at least one of them bite them in the ass, and look what happened. That's it. You got to score touchdowns in the playoffs. You have to do it, especially against a great defense like Seattle, especially when they're giving you the ball in their own territory.
Totally.
And you're on the one-yard line twice, and you can't get at least one of those punched in there with a guy like Eddie Lacy, who probably behind Marshawn Lynch is the most violent, hardest runner in the NFL right now. So, look, Green Bay had a chance. They shot themselves in the foot. Seattle stayed in the game, came back, and we had a great ending, and it was wonderful to watch at the end.
Before we take a break, I just want to ask if you saw the story of the guy that caught Jermaine Kearse's touchdown overtime ball.
No.
To the stands.
No.
He was offered $22,000 by some sports memorabilia company.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's like father of two. I think he's going to jail or prison for a couple, I don't know, in a couple weeks. He was offered $22,000 to in exchange for the football, and he said no.
Wow. That seems like a really stupid thing to say. 22 grand's a lot of money, especially if you're paying lawyers' fees and need bail and whatnot.
That was from Deadspin. I'm not trying to, you know, create any rumors here, but that's what I heard. Also, I heard that the fan wants to give it back to Jermaine Kearse himself, so we'll see if that ends up being the story as well. All right, so that recaps the Packers-Seahawks game. Like I said, Packers sent packing. Seattle will go back to the Super Bowl for the second straight year in a row. They are the 2014 NFC champions, and they will take on the New England Patriots, who beat the Indianapolis Colts in the AFC championship. We will break down that game, get Kevin's inside, information about what was going on in that game. It's going to be a lot of fun when we get back. We'll recap the AFC championship right here on the Fantasy Football Champs presented by DraftKings.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No. Pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Want to split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument to flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
All right, so thank you so much. A year ago when these teams met in the AFC divisional round, the temperature at game time, 57 degrees in the warmest home playoff game in Pats history. Tonight, the temperature, 53. The rain falling, the wind starting to stir.
It was, you know, a great team win. I mean, we need it from all three phases. And to make to this point is a great accomplishment for our team. Hopefully our best is yet to come.
It's a low snap. Allen controls it at his ankles, launches a high punt with plenty of hang time. It's short, and Grips comes up, and he bobbles it. Ooh, loses the football, and Darius Fleming is on the spot to recover for the Patriots.
What is he doing?
Heavy set, tight end each way. Gronkowski motions to the right. Brady turns, gives it to Blunt. Rams straight ahead. LeGarrette trimming the legs, reaching again for the goal line. That's driving it forward. Touchdown, Patriots!
The players play great, like they have all year. This is really a good group. It's a hard-working group. They work with each other. They try to help each other get better. You know, couldn't be happier for this group of guys.
The all-time postseason leader in field goals made, so many of them for the Patriots. Adam Vinatieri is on now to attempt a 51-yarder in his ninth year for Indy. The snap on the spot by McAfee. Swing to the right leg. The kick driving toward the uprights, and the kick is no good. White steps back from the right side and motions to the left. Brady pulls away. Short throw. Right side for Devlin. Stood up. Fighting for the goal line. Diving forward. Touchdown, Patriots! Not to be denied.
They said he went to the school called Brown. Yeah, you may have went to class. That kid spent a lot of time in the weight room.
We needed him to play good and step up and play big tonight. And they did. We got it from so many guys. And that was really the story of the game.
Brady drops back. Play fake to Breed. Tom fires down the middle for drive. Ball picked off by Nicole Jackson inside the five. He carries it to the left, and he's knocked down by Vereen at the six.
Bad throw by Brady. Forced the issue. Come on, Tom.
First and goal to go for the Colts out of the eye. Doyle, the fullback for Tipton, who takes the handoff. He runs it right. He dives in for a touchdown. The Colts capitalizing on mistakes by the Patriots. 28 seconds to go, first half. It is fourth and inches for the Patriots from the four. Ready? Reaches under center, takes the snap, turning left. Devlin trying to push him forward. Tom's still churning, still nice. Driving. And Brady has accomplished his aim. It is first and goal to go, it appears, as he reaches the three.
We've got a lot of good teams in the past. This one is going to have to, win a very important game to kind of leave our legacy.
Spotted at the 11, 21-yard try. Swings the right leg. He drives the kick airborne to the uprights, and it's good. The 20th field goal in the postseason career of Steven Gostkowski has given the Patriots a 17-7 advantage.
Obviously proud of our effort tonight. Won two pretty tough games here at home, and now we got to go on the road and win another one.
Third down and inches for the pass. Brady will move under center. Cameron Fleming, the extra tackle right. Gronkowski there as well. Double stack to the right. Blunt in the back. But Brady pulls away. Play fake to Blunt. Quick throw to a tackle eligible shoulder. Across the five. They barreling over a defender. Diving to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots.
How about that? Don't throw it to anybody.
Nate made a great catch. You know, tough conditions out there. It's rainy. I mean, for God's sakes, he runs over two guys to get in there. So, he played a little tight end his first year. I don't know. Maybe we have more tricks up our sleeve.
Patriots leading 31-7. 2.5 minutes to go here on the third. Shotgun snap to Luck, backing up against a four-man rush. Lobs a throw near side, picked off by Darrell Revis. Left sideline 30. Revis to the 20. Revis to the 15. Tackled by Luck.
Place is nuts. Warm up the buses.
Luck's in the backfield. He takes the handoff. LeGarrette blasts it straight ahead. Curves left. Across the five. Between two defenders. Touchdown, Patriots.
Blood, force, trauma. The place is rocking. Nobody's leaving. Nobody wants to go home. You want to sim traffic all night long as you get ready for the Super Bowl.
He ran good, and he made some great cuts, you know, in not good conditions. And we found yards when there weren't a lot there. He's a tough guy to tackle.
Shotgun snap to Luck. Fires near side, picked off by Jamie Collins. Right sideline 50. Hurdles Luck and lands at the 40-yard line. Gronkowski motions right. Overload there. Hand off to Blunt. A blast up the middle. Diving across the goal line. Touchdown, Patriots. A charm for LeGarrette Blunt. Here comes Jimmy Garoppolo. From the far side. And there goes Tom Brady. That's it. Steve, sideline run.
Phenomenal job. Bill Belichick, as he embraces his quarterback in his 15th year. It's an encore for number 12.
Well, Tom's a good player. He works hard. He's in good conditions. Obviously very smart. He works as hard as any player we have. And my guy's as talented as he is and works as hard as he does. Those results aren't that surprising.
The New England Patriots thoroughly dominated the Indianapolis Colts. The quarterback who has started and won more postseason games than any other is bound for a sixth start in the Super Bowl. The head coach who has won more playoff games than any other will lead the Patriots there in 2 weeks to confront the Seattle Seahawks. New England will seek the NFL Summit in the Valley of the Sun. They're going to Glendale for Super Bowl 49.
Good stuff there from our producer Kevin Collins, Bob Soshi, and Scott Zolak from 98.5. You heard the play-by-play call this past Sunday. It was the biggest the second biggest lopsided AFC Championship victory, 45-7. The Colts never stood a chance in this one, even though some people can look at the first half being a little close, 17-7 as we were heading into halftime. Pats really opened things up in a big way in the second half. And, Kevin, you did a great job with that highlight package there. What was your feeling, not necessarily just from a fan aspect, but, you know, as an employee of the team, when you're running out of that tunnel for the AFC Championship, you know what's on the line, you know what's at stake. What was kind of the feeling on the field? Is everyone still, you know, we're professionals, we're here to win, or is it a little bit, you know what, this game is just a little different?
I think for this one, it was pretty professional, Bill, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I didn't have a ton of nerves heading into this one like I did the Baltimore game. I think that had everything to do not necessarily with the stage, but like who we were playing, and mm-hmm. also like bad past experiences with that team. And by bad, I mean losing, you know, big games in this building and, you know, costing us trips to the Super Bowl. I don't want to sound cocky, but I wasn't nervous going into this game, and I don't think a ton of people around me that worked here were nervous going into this game. I think we were pretty bullish on our chances to advance. I felt like when we got past the Ravens, a lot of us here felt like we were going. I never, even with the pick that Brady threw, you know, they could have gone in, Bill, in that possession and made it 21-0 and really ended the game.
Yep.
Even with that, I didn't get nervous even when that pick got turned into points, because I expected the Colts to not just roll over and die at 14-0. You know, I mean, that team has been through too much the past couple of years. Andrew Luck is too good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their coach, with what he's gone through, I knew that they would rally somewhat and have a run in them. And I actually thought the game might even get tighter than it was. But it really kind of ended at that. The Patriots go down, tack on 3, and then 7 coming out of the halftime, which is what they weren't able to do to Baltimore the week before.
Right.
And I really, even at, you know, at 24-7, I thought, you know, warm up the bus, as Zoe said on the broadcast. I mean, you could tell just by looking out on the field that team on the other side quit. They didn't want anything, you know, they didn't want anything to do with being in that game. They wanted to get out of the rain, get on the bus, and go home. And as a Colts fan, I would have been pretty I don't know. I wouldn't have been too happy with the effort my club put forth in the second half.
Now, you saw the Seahawks win in overtime.
I did.
As a Patriot fan, were you happy Seattle won? Did
no.
you want to play them?
I'm terrified.
Or did you
I'm terrified.
You would rather have played the Packers.
Yeah, I was actually pretty happy throughout most of that game thinking that we were going to play the Packers.
Am I wrong to believe that that is the consensus of most Patriot fans last week?
No, you're not wrong. I think that is the consensus.
Right.
You could
they
sense,
would rather play the Packers.
You could sense, like I said, Bill, that game's on our giant screens in the stadium. The stadium's
right.
full. Everyone sees it. And when that bomb went up and got caught and, you know, the score gets flashed as a final, 28-22, you could sense some murmuring and a little bit of a groan, you know? I don't think that the Patriots or their fans, I don't think scared's the right word. I just don't like, I don't think that the matchup is as favorable as it would have been with the Packers, right? It's the same thing with Baltimore. Like, a lot of people think that Indy was a better team than Baltimore this year. They played better, they had a better record, they had a better seed, all that stuff. But I think when it comes down to the matchup, Baltimore was a tougher matchup for New England than Indy was, okay?
Yep.
Despite the record and the stats and all the good stuff that Luck did, I think that you have to look at the Super Bowl through the same kind of prism. I think you have a sample size already that, you know, from the Patriots-Green Bay game a couple months ago, both teams were relatively healthy going into that game. I think all the movers and the shakers were pretty much in play for that game. So the game got played. It got played up there in those conditions with that crowd. And the Patriots had every chance, Bill, to win that game. And if you recall, on their last possession, they get down to, like, the Green Bay 25-yard line. It's 26-21, so a touchdown might win it. And even one of those plays that they ran there was like a one-on-one jump ball to Gronk that he almost came up with. I mean, that it was about as close a game as you could play. And I think that a lot of Patriots fans have this confidence from that game knowing we can play with these guys. You know, we played them up there on their turf. Now we're playing in a neutral turf, and we've already kind of got to look at what they do, which is also a huge part of this, Bill, because I think most of us that know the Patriots really well and that have followed Belichick and Brady throughout the last 15 years, a lot of us know that this is a game plan oriented team. And there was, and there was no question that, you know, the struggles coming out of the gate this year with all the changes that got made in the offensive line and such forth, you know, they struggled the first 4 or 5 weeks, 6 weeks of the season to really find an identity and also figure out how they were going to attack other teams because they didn't know what they had, you know? And as they sort of figured out themselves, it sort of helped them game plan better for other teams.
Well, when Anthony and I were breaking down the game last week or previewing the game last week, we said, okay, the last three times these two teams have played, the Pats have scored in the 40s, and they've won by at least 20.
20, yep.
Also, there was over 200 yards rushing in the last two games, and a total of 10 rushing touchdowns in the last two games. Last year in the playoffs, it was LeGarrette Blount had 4, Stephen Ridley had 2. This past year, when they met in the regular season in Week 11, Jonas Gray had a 200-yard day for 4 touchdowns. So Anthony and I were going back and forth, who is the running back that's going to have the success for the Pats this week? Because we knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
There was going to be someone, LeGarrette Blount, Shane Vereen, Brandon Bolden, Jonas Gray, one of those guys, we said it, was going to win somebody a lot of money on DraftKings last week. You just had to pick the right one.
Yeah.
And LeGarrette Blount was the one, obviously, in this game that came through. 3 touchdowns, 148 yards, 30 attempts. No other running back had more than 4 attempts. Actually, Jonas Gray had 4, Shane Vereen had 1, and Brandon Bolden didn't even get a rushing attempt this game. So, yes, the game plan against the Colts, the last few times that Belichick and the Pats have played them was run it down their throats.
Yep.
And it's worked.
Yeah, and I would have, if you had put me in a position, I wasn't doing the daily fantasy this week, I would have taken Blount of the stable of backs to have the big day. Like, he would have been my pick as to the guy that was going to break out.
Yep.
Just based off past performance and also looking at the type of conditions the game was going to be played under. Ball security, obviously, at a premium when it's pouring rain and wind and all that good stuff. And he's a guy, knock on wood, Bill, as I'm literally knocking on wood as I say this, that has not had a ton of ball security issues when he's been in a Patriot uniform. I don't know. You know, he didn't have a ton of looks in Pittsburgh, and before, I forget even where he was, but he didn't have a stigma attached to him when he got here as a guy that fumbled or put the ball on the ground a lot.
Right.
So I think that that's a huge part of what Bill values. I think that you look going back to the Ben Jarvis Green Ellis era, and you look at
another non-fumbler.
Yeah, or like even a guy like Corey Dillon, a guy like Antoine Smith. And now Corey Dillon was as good a back as there could be when he was in his prime. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of the guys that the Pats have been sort of like, I don't know, like workman-like, not flashy, not a ton of wiggle to them. But Bill tends to gravitate toward the backs that will get 3-4 yards a carry, always kind of go forward, fall forward, and hold on to the ball. That's really all he asks. He doesn't ask for you to break 20, 30, 40, you know, 60-yard runs like a LeSean McCoy or one of these electric guys in the open field. Bill values possession over all, and I think that with what you have in Brady and the kind of offense you run with the spread and throwing it all over the place, you really use the run to set up the pass and to kind of keep the defense honest. And if you can pop a couple for, you know, 12, 15, 20 yards in a game, by all means, that's just icing on the cake.
There was a couple times in this game where I just said to myself, not only are the Patriots rolling, but Andrew Luck is just not ready to defeat this defense. He just doesn't have the answers for what Bill Belichick and the defense defensive coordinator for the Pats are doing.
And I got a quick question for you guys too. Like, you know, as more national guys, you know, that have a greater kind of grasp on the national scene and also look at things from kind of a prism outside of Foxborough. There was a lot of a local talk radio this week leading into the game that were kind of harping on, okay, Luck isn't ready for this stage. He's not ready to win, you know, to come in this building and beat this head coach and beat this team, blah, blah, blah. I look at it, Bill, if I'm a Colts fan, right, with as disheartened as I was by the second half effort, and the fact that LeGarrette Blount was literally having no holes to run through, but physically just running through your defense and just knocking people over that didn't want to, that looked like they were disinterested in tackling him. I'll put it to put it politely. As disheartening as that was, and as disappointing as it is to have your season end, I feel like the Colts fans should look at this past season as a success. Okay, you win your division, you win your home game, which you've proven you can done. But then you went on the road and you took that next step on, you know, beating one of those first two seeds in a huge game, a playoff game on the road, which is something that Andrew Luck had not done. So I feel like, Bill, if I'm a Colts fan and I'm looking at this from a national perspective, that generally when teams start to kind of like team build and get to that top 4-6 team upper echelon in the league,
right,
it's usually done over a number of years. Like, it takes a couple years of making the playoffs or maybe winning one or two games before you actually take that jump into the Super Bowl. The 2001-2002 Patriots, who went from like literally nothing to winning the Super Bowl, are the sort, they're the exception, not the norm, in my opinion.
Right.
You know, so for Luck, in, you know, as the franchise quarterback in the Colts and Jim Irsay and Pagano and everybody else over there trying to figure out the pieces to go around him, Bill, like on both sides of the ball, I feel like they're building something, because every year that Luck's been there, I feel like they've improved and they've gone a little bit further. That's just my perspective, but I was curious as to you and Ant's perspective.
Well, you're right. They've gotten to the wild card game, then the divisional game, and then this is the first AFC Championship game. So if that trend continues, they'll be in the Super Bowl next year. Now, they do need a few weapons. They are losing a few players, and their defense could always improve. Vontae Davis is one of the best cornerbacks in the league, but he has been hurt. But he fits their scheme. We'll see if their coaches stay intact, because I know a few of their offensive special coaches are getting interviews for offensive coordinator jobs. But the Colts, obviously, they're going to be good for a long time. And they have been good for a long time, dating back to when they drafted Peyton. So the Colts aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, and I felt like it was almost unfair to the Colts leading into that game, Bill, by people saying, oh, you know, they're not ready for this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, before we saw Denver lay that egg, Bill, a lot of us thought, you know, I thought that Denver was going to win that game against the Colts at home. I thought, You know, even with Manning and his troubles or whatever, I thought Denver, you know, their defense is definitely, in my opinion, better than the Colts' defense, and they're playing at home, and they've got more weapons, and I thought that overall, if you look at the whole body of that team, Denver was a better team.
Right.
And the fact that Indy went in there and not only beat them, but held them down, like dominated for large stretches of that game.
Yeah.
Like, how can you say that they, like, maybe, like, couldn't come in here? Like, I was as confident as anyone that the Pats were going to win this game, okay? Mm-hmm. I didn't know exactly that it would get, you know, as out of hand as it did. I think my kind of personal view on it was they'd win by more than a touchdown, but it wouldn't be the three touchdowns they've averaged in win margin over the, you know? But I didn't think it was fair from, you know, certain media saying that, you know, the Colts aren't ready to win this game, they're not ready for this stage, blah, blah, blah. You know, you could argue that for them in that franchise, that game in Denver was as big as it gets. That was just as big as this game, you know? And so I was, it just kind of bothered me. Like, I didn't think that they really stood a chance because I think the Patriots are that much better. I didn't think it had anything to do with, like, the stage. And that's my greater point.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I really thought that the Colts, after taking that step, beating Denver in Denver, I thought they would at least come and I didn't think they were winning this game, but I thought, like you said, they would keep it less than that average of 20 points or three touchdowns that they've been getting beaten by the last couple times. And yeah. I just getting drubbed by almost 40 points was
just ridiculous.
Nothing I really saw coming.
I thought it would be in between, like, let's say 7 and 20. Like, I thought it would be, like, maybe a 14-point game or something like that.
100% agree. But you know what? Like you said about Andrew Luck, he's a great, great player, great quarterback. And I think if you're a Colts fan, the one thing to take away and to look at from a positive light is Peyton Manning's got maybe a year left. Tom Brady's got, what, 2 or 3 years left?
Yep.
After that, the Colts could virtually be a shoo-in at saying this today as the AFC champion because Andrew Luck's the only real elite quarterback left in the AFC once those two guys are out of the game.
Yeah, the only thing that I would say to that, Ant, is just based off, and maybe just because he's done it to me and my team and my
Joe
building.
Flacco.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. That's a guy you got to watch out for.
He's sneaky.
Yeah, come January, you know, he'll have his stinkers. He absolutely will. And I think that when you look at the level of consistency throughout a 17-game season and into the playoffs, Andrew Luck is, I think, just better at keeping that level of performance up, and he's not as much of a roller coaster as Joe Flacco.
Right.
And I think that might even be a fair statement to say for the Colts team in general. You know, they're not going to be losing three games in a row or, you know, in this, you know, be playing for your playoff life against, I forget who was even the quarterback for the Browns. Was it Connor Shaw that last week? And you look up and it's like they're losing in the fourth quarter to Connor Shaw. And it's like, well, what the hell? There's some inconsistencies with Baltimore for sure. But I think that you have to give at this stage, the sample size is large enough. And Flacco won the Super Bowl. I think he was the Super Bowl MVP. He's won a ton of huge games. I think you got to give him – you have to put him – if you take Brady and Manning out, you have to put him in the AFC in that level with Luck.
What do you say we jump over to some emails here, then we want to take a quick break, get into some of the fantasy football awards from 2014. We got an email from No Name. His name is No Name. Says No Name on the email. Don't really understand what he's saying. Not sure if he has a good grasp on the English language or any kind of language for that matter. First sentence is most wanted to see, !. And then it says us real Pats fans, !. For the Pats to play against the Seahawks, !. So I guess he's trying to say that the real Pats fans wanted to see Patriots play against the Seahawks.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
I don't agree with that either. Then No Name goes on to say Sherman needs a smack in the mouth, !.
I agree with that.
Okay. And what kind of jerk, question, turns off a Pats game, ? And then he goes on to say we really need Pats fan broadcasting on Pats radio, !. Not these washout loudmouths, LOL. Go Pats, !. Now, my only problem with No Name's email is
that he has no name.
No, not even that. Kevin, how long have I been doing the show for? Three years?
Yeah, a long time. We've been together.
Yeah, so I've never hidden the fact that I wasn't a Pats fan, although I do respect but the, I don't feel, the franchise.
But Bill, I don't feel like you're anti-Pats at all.
I'm not at all.
No.
But my point about to be is, all right, so he makes the point that we need real Pats fan broadcasting on Pats radio, and then he says us real Pats fans a couple times in this email. But how big of a Pats fan could he really be if this is the first time he's hearing us and not hearing
boo,
goo goo gaga over Patriots?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, if you want the footy pajama wearing, you know, Pat fan broadcast. As much as, you know, we broadcast on the team website, and we obviously, a lot of us, you know, employed by the team, blah, blah, blah. But we do, I feel like, a really good job of trying to be objective on all the shows that we have.
Yep.
And I think that one of the great things that our ownership group does is the crafts are, like, really great in giving us that, like, journalistic freedom to kind of speak our minds and give our opinions on the team, even though sometimes they might be negative. We've never been told, we're not puppets, Bill. We've never been told what to say. Not once.
Never once in 4 years was I told to tone it down.
Never once
in 4 years was I told to, you know, take it easy on this player, this coach, anything like that.
Yeah, and I've gone off a couple times on rants over my 5 years, five full seasons, and, like, really been negative, and I've never once been even so much addressed. You know, what I've said has never even been addressed. So I think that we do a good job of trying to, like, I know a lot of us are kind of biased toward the Pats, and we love the team, and we're from here, and we work here, blah, blah, blah. But I think that when, you know, the team needs to be criticized or things need to be called in question, we do a good job of that. And I think that most fans want to hear a little bit of criticism when the team's not playing well and want the needle to be moved so that maybe it gets heard down the hall. You know, maybe it motivates them. Yeah. Who knows? Because I know for one that stuff that's been said on our air and stuff that's been written in the team newspaper has made it down the hall and been a motivating factor.
I'm sure.
I know that.
Brian in Essex, Vermont, has a good email. He starts off by saying he was with you. He was a little bit worried about taking on the Seattle Seahawks in Super Bowl 49. But after this weekend's game, it tells him that Seattle is vulnerable. They can be beaten and that their offense and defense do make mistakes and can be scored on. Brian goes on to say, I think the Pats' secondary is better than Green Bay's, which means Wilson's room for error will be even smaller. Our special teams unit is also exceptional. Not good, not above average. I'd say exceptional. Yep. So going in, I would give the Patriots like 25% chance. Now, I'd say it's closer to 50 to 60% chance.
Yeah.
We lambasted the Pats last week for their defensive, offensive mistakes performances. They just got shredded by the Colts. Again, win or lose, I expect the Colts to be better. So I think it's fair to be high on both sides of the ball. Brady does need to stop trying to force balls to Gronk, though.
Oh,
I think
for
he
sure.
has tunnel vision on Gronk at times, and it cost the team the points.
I couldn't agree with that statement. Yeah, I couldn't agree with that statement more, Brian. And Brian's an awesome emailer, and he's also
very active
on Twitter, too.
Anyway, great season, great performance on Sunday. Love the show, guys. Go Pats. That was Brian in Essex. Really good email from Brian.
So to even piggyback on that point further, Brady has had his blankets over the years, and he was very guilty of locking in on Moss all the time and trying to force the ball in on Moss. And it was the same with Welker, and now it's the same with Gronk.
You know, I don't mind that, though, because who are the three players you just named?
They were the best
players.
Yeah, they were the best.
They are the best players
options
on the field.
Exactly.
So I don't mind when you're forcing it into one of the best players. You expect the best players to make the best plays, so I'm okay with it.
Let me just play devil's advocate for a sec, Bill.
Yeah.
So the play that Brian was alluding to, the Gronk pick, was right
interception.
Probably to do midway to a little bit more than midway through the second quarter, was my guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was 14-0. The Patriots were moving into Colts territory. We're probably at like the 35 to 40 yard. And I'm doing this off the top of my head. They had four first downs on that drive, and it had been predominantly running. They had been running the ball down the Colts' throat with Blum.
Mm-hmm.
It was first and 10 from that kind of, you know how you hear the commentators always talk about when you cross midfield, you're in that like go zone, like between like the 35 and the 50 when you try to take your shot. So it's first and 10 from, you know, in that window of the field. And I think, you know, McDaniels and Brady thought, all right, we've been running it, like, they're going to load the box. Blunt's in the backfield. I'm under center. We're going to give them a run look, and we're going to spring Gronk down the middle of the field. Okay. I love the idea. Love it. But when you've been moving the ball sort of at will and you're going in for, at the time when I'm standing there on the sideline, what I felt like was the kill shot. If they go in and they go up 21-0, it's over, okay?
Right.
It really bugged me that, you know, he forced that one in there when they were moving it so easily on the ground. I didn't mind taking the shot, but when rewatching the game, like, there were a couple other shorter options open.
Yeah.
And he really, really wanted the headshot, you know, and he really wanted to get, and don't blame him for that. And he wanted 87 involved because he hadn't had a catch and he really hadn't had any looks, Bill, because as you alluded to, with Vontae Davis being the player that he was, the Colts, I think very intelligently took their best guy in the secondary and put him on Gronk.
Yep.
And to that stage of the game, he basically Revis'd Gronk, where, you know, when we see Revis take a guy out of a game, Brady was not even looking at Gronk for the first, I'll say, 25 minutes of that game.
Mm-hmm.
And Vontae Davis was doing a great job kind of neutralizing him, and everything when the Patriots had been moving the ball was to everybody else. And Tom had done a great job of, like, you know, throwing to the open guy, as we say. Whoever's open is Tom's guy. So it bothered me that when you're kind of going in for that kill shot, I don't mind the play call at all. I love it. I love being aggressive. I love trying to look for your number one target. I love all of that. But my beef was with Brady. Just, you know, you got to see that he's bracketed. He's got a guy behind him. He's got the safety behind him, the linebacker underneath him. He's 30 yards down the field. That's a real tough throw. And even if he fits it over the linebacker, he's probably going to get Gronk lit up. It's just I didn't like it. I didn't like the decision from the quarterback. I didn't mind the call from the coordinator. Just my take, though, Bill.
The Patriots go on to win 45-7, absolute a rout of the Indianapolis Colts, second biggest blowout in AFC Championship history. They will play the Seattle Seahawks in Glendale, Arizona on February 1st for Super Bowl 49. We will preview that game on our last show of the year on Thursday. We're looking forward to it. We hope you join us. But we do want to take a quick break now and get to our fantasy football awards to end today's show. And that'll do a nice little put a bow on our 2014 fantasy football season. And then again, Super Bowl preview show on Thursday. So quick break, more fantasy football jams coming up next.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No, pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Want to split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument to flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of Domino's. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Anthony Grace and Bill Enright are the Fantasy Football Champs.
All right, welcome back, Fantasy Football Champs. Final segment of today's show. Again, we'll have our Super Bowl 49 preview, Pats versus Seahawks. That'll be on Thursday live here on Patriots.com Radio 4 to 6. Of course, you can always listen to us on demand, Patriots.com, the website, or on the Patriots mobile app. Final segment of the show, I do want to get into our fantasy football awards. We took a few callers at the beginning of the show, a couple emails, a couple people sending some tweets in, but I do think it's always fun to kind of just look back, even if it's just for a few minutes, look back at the 2014 fantasy season, talk a little bit about who helped us win our championships, who maybe pushed us into the playoffs, or who were some of our worst draft picks. So I think we should go right to the awards here, skip over the top performers at each position. I want to start with the Fantasy Rookie of the Year, and Anthony, you have four nominations here. Why don't you go through them?
Yeah, look, there's a couple guys that stuck out as far as rookies. And look, obviously, Odell Beckham Jr., everybody knows what he did. Everybody who doesn't watch football knows what Odell Beckham Jr. did. That catch against Dallas was just everywhere. So Odell Beckham definitely, I think, has to be one of the nods for your Fantasy Rookie of the Year. Another wide receiver, Mike Evans, down in Tampa Bay. Finished the season over 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns. Had a great year, came on strong late, had that nice run in the middle of the season. So he looked good, looks like he's going to have a nice career. Kelvin Benjamin, another wide receiver, over 70 catches, over 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns. He has a nice rapport going with Cam Newton already. Guy that can go up and get the ball, a guy that can get targeted a whole lot in that offense. And Jeremy Hill, running back, I think he has to be nominated for Rookie of the Year as well. Over 1,100 rushing yards, 9 touchdowns, threw in another 27 catches for 215 yards. So what that guy did up in Cincinnati with Giovanni Bernard slated to be the starter after they got rid of the law firm, he really came on of late, and he's probably going to be the main guy going forward in that backfield. Yeah. So a couple real good rookies came in this year and contributed in big ways for fantasy football owners.
I'm with you on Jeremy Hill. I think he was one of the not only better rookies, but he was really one of the best backs over the second half of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Evans had a few really, really solid games. Kelvin Benjamin was pretty good every single week. But the Fantasy Rookie of the Year, it's no question, and you said it. It's Odell Beckham Jr. What he did in just 12 games was simply remarkable. I mean,
unreal.
He finished in the top five in nearly every single category. 91 catches, 1,300 yards, 12 touchdowns, top 10 in every category, with only playing 12 games. So for him to do that as a rookie, yeah, you're damn right he's going to get the Rookie of the Year. How about waiver wire pickup of the year? Now, since we used ODB for Rookie of the Year, let's stay away for him for the pickup of the year. Who are some of your candidates here?
Again, there's a couple guys out there that got picked up off the waiver wire outside of ODB that had good years. Look, Justin Forsett, one of the first guys that comes to mind. Kind of went over him a little bit earlier in the show with some of the callers. Had a fantastic year down in Baltimore, and he's a true waiver wire pickup because he's not getting drafted by anybody before the season starts, buried on that depth chart. I know Jeremy Hill came up for this position, but again, I think he got drafted here and there as a handcuff, so I don't put him as much, but You got Justin Forsett. You got C.J. Anderson in Denver. Again, a banged-up backfield going through guys. C.J. Anderson comes on and stays on for the rest of the year. And I'm not sure how strongly we can consider this guy, but Matt Asiata in Minnesota is finished as a top 20 running back without Adrian Peterson there. Played, obviously, every game when Adrian Peterson left. Only had 570 yards, but got in the end zone 10 times total between rushing and catching the ball. So I'm not sure if he's the main man moving forward in Minnesota. Maybe they draft somebody, but if not, he's shown flashes. So I think he's another guy that we can at least consider for a waiver wire pickup this year.
I think all those candidates are great, but to me, it's Justin Forsett over all of those guys simply for the fact that he did it from the beginning of the season.
Yes.
He was not drafted. Maybe in 5% of leagues he was drafted. But he did it from the beginning of the season, 11 carries, 70 yards, and a touchdown in week one. And he was just on a roll starting from that point. He finished with 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns, 44 catches. Another 263 on the ground. He was solid in the PPR. He was solid in the non-PPR. He came through in the fantasy playoffs for a lot of people. 4 straight weeks going into the fantasy playoffs with over 100 yards certainly helped people propel them into the postseason. So for me, he is my waiver wire pickup of the year.
I think I have to agree with that. I love Justin Forsett, guy I picked up personally, and ended up being my running back one for most of the year because of some injuries and other stuff. So Justin Forsett, I got a special place in my heart for him in 2014.
All right, now for breakout player of the year, you have a couple guys here. Le'Veon Bell, Jeremy Hill, Odell Beckham, DeMarco Murray, Andrew Luck, Justin Forsett, Emmanuel Sanders. And I don't know if this is allowed, but I'm going to take a rookie here. I'm going to go with Jeremy Hill.
I think it's allowed. He broke onto the scene, didn't he? Yeah, why the hell not?
He broke out onto the scene, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, now this is why I'm not picking Le'Veon Bell. I'm not picking DeMarco Murray. I'm not picking Andrew Luck, and I'm not picking Emmanuel Sanders. We already knew that those guys were quality players. Maybe not so much for Emmanuel Sanders. But DeMarco Murray, Le'Veon Bell, they were already, even before what they did this year, they were top 15 players at the running back spot.
Right.
Andrew Luck, top 10 player at the quarterback spot. Justin Forsett, we just gave him the waiver wire pickup award. I can't give him the breakout player award, but he's been in the league for quite some time now as well.
Yeah.
Jeremy Hill, to me, he's a breakout player because he had a breakthrough the depth chart on his own team.
100%.
Gio Bernard was the starting running back all year, and it took an injury to Bernard, and then Hill never gave that job back to him. So Jeremy Hill has now, in my mind, established himself as a top 15, maybe a top 12 running back heading into next season. And even though he's a rookie, he broke out onto the scene this year in a really big way.
I agree with you. I think he had a great year. Definitely a great option for a breakout player. Like I said, Le'Veon Bell, DeMarco Murray, Andrew Luck, these guys, they took a big step forward this year, I think, put them into a different type of category. I don't know if they were quote-unquote studs before this, but this year they definitely separate themselves in that respect. But my breakout player is going to be Emmanuel Sanders. I know we saw him have a good year last year, or two years ago now, in Pittsburgh before he moved on to Denver. But look, over 100 catches for the first time in his career this year. He basically doubled his best yardage season, having over 1,400 yards this year, 9 touchdowns. I know he played on an offense that was better than a lot of other guys out there. Having Demaryius Thomas across from you definitely helps get you open more. But look, Emmanuel Sanders in the beginning of the season wasn't really getting into the end zone. He was more of a PPR type guy, really helping out guys in your PPR leagues. And then in the middle of the season, he had that run putting up touchdowns and multiple touchdowns in a bunch of games and came through in championship week at Cincinnati, week 16 with 2 touchdowns. So I think Emmanuel Sanders took a big leap from what we saw of him in his career to this point, and hopefully he keeps it going no matter who the quarterback is there.
That's a really good pick. I can't argue with that one for a breakout player. I think you're right. Good suggestion with Emmanuel Sanders. I think Jeremy Hill, another good candidate as well. But, you know, that's why you have these kind of conversations, because there is no real winner. And there's not going to be a real winner in this next category as well for the comeback player.
Yeah, a couple guys.
I think we had, I forget who it was on the phone earlier, one of the callers said that it should be Gronk. And I can't argue with that. It certainly can be Gronk for comeback player.
Definitely.
I'm going with Arian Foster.
Yeah,
he played in only 8 games in 2013. He only finished with 542 rushing yards in those 8 games.
Mm-hmm.
This year, he played in 13 games, finished with 1,200 rushing yards. He also got into the end zone 13 times. 5 of them were receiving touchdowns. So for me, my comeback player, he goes from 8 to 13, back into that elite running back status. I'm going to go with Arian Foster as my comeback player.
I think that is a great pick, a huge year that that Arian Foster had, and again, not playing a full season. When this guy's healthy, we know what he's done, and he had a huge year. I mean, every time you watch this guy, he's making moves. He's a human highlight, as some people might say. So I love that pick by you with Arian Foster. Again, a lot of people could be nominated for this. I'm gonna go with Antonio Gates. Look, similar yardage he put up the last couple of years, 870 yards last year, 820 this year, a couple reception difference, but went from 4 touchdowns to 12 touchdowns this year. A huge, huge leap. Finished as, I believe, the number 2 tight end in all of fantasy football this year behind Rob Gronkowski. So I think Antonio Gates had a huge year. Again, maybe another guy that could have been picked up off the waivers. I know Miley, he got drafted in the 16th round, so someone got a huge deal out of him. So loved that Antonio Gates started getting into the end zone again and showed that elite status that he had a few years ago for a stretch run.
Now, for this next category, I don't think there is a debate. Biggest bust, to me, it has
Adrian
to be
Peterson.
Adrian Peterson. It just has to be. I'm sorry. He was a top 3 pick, maybe the number 1 overall pick, maybe the number 2 overall pick, certainly in the top 3. And for him to only play one game, for him to go through what he went through in the court system, for him to tell or for NFL fans or Vikings fans or fantasy football players to think that he was going to win his appeal and come back into the league, and we were telling people to pick him up because that's what it seemed like he was going to happen. It seemed like he was going to be back in the game in December, and it never happened. He is, without question, the bust of the year.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson. I mean, I guess maybe if I'm nominating another guy, a lot of wide receivers kind of let us down this year. Michael Floyd, Pierre Garçon, Crabtree, Percy Harvin.
But none of them were expected to be top three in
their
position. A stud,
yeah, exactly. So without question, Adrian Peterson has to be this is the one category I don't think there's really much of a debate that who wins this or loses this. I'm not sure how we're wording it, but Adrian Peterson, biggest bust of 2014.
All right, so here comes the final award that we're going to give out, and Kevin, I want your thoughts on this too. Who is the fantasy MVP from 2014?
It's got to be Le'Veon Bell in my mind. I think
that a boy, Anthony. That's what I'm going with too.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell's the guy. Look, I know DeMarco Murray had a great year, over 1,800 rushing yards, a super solid year. Actually played 16 games. Like, we got to give him credit for that. Yeah. 13 touchdowns by him. But look, Le'Veon Bell, man, did every single thing you can ask a running back to do. He ran hard. He ran fast. He caught passes. Look, over 2,000 total yards, he had 11 total touchdowns, caught 83 passes, which was the second most in the NFL, one of only two running backs with over 100 targets. So the way this Pittsburgh offense is starting to come together under Todd Haley, I love it. I think Le'Veon Bell is going to be huge next year, and I think he was the MVP for 2014.
I'm totally with you there. I certainly appreciate it, and I like watching what DeMarco Murray was doing.
Oh, yeah.
But specifically in the fantasy playoffs, Le'Veon Bell, it seems like he elevated his game in a big way. And if you had him on your squad, you probably won your league because he was just phenomenal in those last couple of weeks, talking about doing it all. As you mentioned, 83 receptions from a running back. That's just
unbelievable.
It's certainly something that you don't see every year.
No.
And for him to only be in his second year in the NFL is certainly, I mean, the kid's only 22 years old.
Yeah,
it's only going to get better from here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, actually, surprisingly. I didn't think you guys
All three of us. All right. Same page.
Yeah, I was on his train back when he was at Michigan State.
I remember that, Kev.
And so I've kind of followed his career for like 6 years now, and he was just such a workhorse, like a bulldozer at MSU, and he'd get 35, 40 carries a game. He was their whole offense. And it's been really cool to watch him develop at the pro level. He's lost some weight.
Yep.
He's gained some shimmy to him, and he's also shown this great ability that he never got to showcase at MSU, catching the ball out of the backfield.
Exactly.
And it's just added another dimension to him as a player, to that offense, and to obviously him as like a fantasy player in those like PPR leagues. He just absolutely eats because he does get a lot of looks from Big Ben, and that offense does run a lot of screens. So I think that if you put all that together, I mean, the fact that he's young, he's got hopefully a promising career ahead of him. I know I gave the guy in our league, in the league that I'm in with all my college friends, it's a keeper league and you can keep two players. And I think he had been drafted maybe in the fifth or sixth round the year before.
Oh, wow.
So going into this past year, he could have been a keeper in the fifth or sixth round, which would have been a steal. And my buddy didn't keep him. And he went in the first, and I don't know. I think it might have been because I think he missed he missed the first game of the year or something like
He didn't miss anything.
No, well, him and Blunt were supposed to miss like a game or something
maybe.
Like that. But anyway, so he didn't get kept, and my roommate actually currently got him, and it was absolutely the steal, the steal of the year. And I think he will be kept for many years to come.
Now, I think some people have a bad taste in their mouth about Le'Veon Bell because he didn't play in that playoff game, which was unfortunate, but he got hurt week 17.
Yeah, and you know, they were playing for the division,
yeah,
you know, in that Bengals game.
Yep.
You know? So it is what it is, but I think a lot of us saw a marked difference, Bill, in that Steeler attack without him.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and you could even see it, Bill and Ant, in that game that he left. You could see the difference between the first half and kind of later in the second half of how they struggled. I think if I remember, and my memory is pretty good with this stuff, the Bengals closed to within maybe 7 points or 3 points or something like that, and it took Big Ben kind of hitting Antonio Brown on like a funky pass with that, like maybe like a 70-yard pass, and it was like a back shoulder throw where the DB kind of got twisted around like a top, and that's what really sealed the game. But Pittsburgh really struggled to score points when he left.
Yeah, it was very clear that once he was off the field, it was not.
So in honor of that, here you go, Bill.
What's this?
The bell.
Oh, Le'Veon Bell. I get it. I'm very slow.
Yeah, I used to have I think I had a t-shirt when he was in college. It said, like, for whom the bell tolls or something like that.
Well, we got to wrap up today's show. We will be back on Thursday for our Super Bowl preview show. I have not
Big
made
show.
My decision if I'm going to come to Arizona or not, Kev.
Big show. big decisions to be made by you. We're leaving Sunday or Monday. It hasn't been decided yet.
We'll talk about that on Thursday, I guess. You got to try to convince me to come out to Arizona.
I would like to.
I have the hotel. I have the media pass all ready to go.
What's holding you back?
I don't know. I got a lot of stuff going on the home front, dude.
Well,
we'll discuss it on Thursday.
You're all growed up. It's you. You know, Todd got all growed up on us, and now you're getting all growed up.
We'll certainly discuss it on Thursday. Before we close out on today's show, though, Anthony Grace, what do you got?
Look, we had a great 2014 fantasy season. Look, a couple guys just went over looking for big 2015s out of some of these guys, and got a big Super Bowl preview show coming up for our last show of the year.
Kevin Collins?
Yeah, I can't wait. Thursday is going to be a bittersweet day for us. It's
definitely
going to be tough to say goodbye, but we're going to have a huge show plan, and I'm going to try to convince Bill to get off his lazy butt so that he can come on the air a time or two when we're out in the desert, because I'm not going to know what else to do with myself. I'm just going to be like talking to a cactus, just rapping, like Gary
Stay
Busey.
Stay tuned. You'll find the answer out on Thursday.
Trying to plug a seashell into a cactus.
Hanging out with batteries and chapstick.
Eastern Standard Time. I want to thank everyone for listening to the Fantasy Football Champs presented by DraftKings. We'll be back. Patriots.com radio. The Pats are back in the Super Bowl. We'll preview the game against the Seahawks for our Super Bowl 49 preview show on Thursday right here on the Fantasy Football Champs.
Thanks for listening to FF Champs on Patriots.com radio. Bill and Anthony are back live every Tuesday and Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time to answer all of your fantasy questions. Log on anytime to Patriots.com to download our latest FF Champs podcast, available after every show. We look forward to hearing from you on the next edition of Fantasy Football Champs.